Hi, and welcome to this new episode of The Light Leaders. Today, I'm with Rishi Basu. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So, Rishi, I'm so happy to have you. We'll talk about yoga. You had a yoga school in Goa for a long time, and I got to know you through two retreats. First, you were attending one of Sarita's retreats, Soulmate Training, and then I entered the one you co-hosted with her. Sarita's been on the show before. So thank you also. Welcome, everyone. Today, we'll talk about yoga. We'll talk about what yoga is truly with someone who knows about that. It's much more than what people usually call yoga. We'll talk about how it can change the world and your vision. So thank you so much for being here. For people who watch, you can like, subscribe, share if you want to help the Light Leaders podcast and the message. And brother Rishi, I want to ask you first, what are you grateful for today?
First, thank you for inviting me to your tribe, to your community, and welcoming me, giving me such warm welcome, and inviting me to your podcast. I'm very happy to share my experiments, my experience, and all the understanding I have gathered through working on this path. So it will be lovely. I'm very happy. Thank you. Feeling lots of gratitude to you.
Thank you for being here. Thank you so much, Rishi. For the people who follow the podcast, if you're wondering what that is, actually, it's very on point because it's a podcast on yoga, and this is my Kundalini yoga turban. It's meant to keep the energy. The reason I put it too is because I did some cupping and I had some marks on my forehead. So it was actually very,
good on you.
Very aligned. Thank you so much, Rishi. I'd love to get started with talking a little bit about your background and how you got into yoga, because you also have a very interesting background about like being a doctor in Norway and so on. I'd love you to share a little bit how you got into yoga.
So, you see, I was born in a family where they were studying all the scriptures. And from very young age, I was interested in learning Sanskrit and all these texts, spiritual texts. And our home was very close to a yoga center. There are four big yoga schools in India. One of them is very close to my home. It's called Bihari School of Yoga. And my father was a disciple of Swami Satyananda. So he was close to him, and whenever he will go to ashram, he will take me there. So from my childhood, I was very connected to Swami Satyananda. He was a direct disciple of Swami Sivananda, and he introduced me to yoga from a very young age. I think I must be 6-7 years old, and I grew up in that environment.
Was Yogananda the one who wrote autobiography of a yogi?
Yogananda comes from Kriya Yoga tradition.
Yeah.
And from Babaji, you might have heard Babaji, Yogananda. So that's another tradition.
Yeah.
But Sivananda tradition, they are the Sanatan Dharma, the Vedanta system, Sankhya system of monastic life.
And so, but who wrote autobiography of a yogi? Is
that was Yogananda.
That was Yogananda.
Yogananda, okay. Yeah. That's also a tradition of yoga. Yoga has many traditions, many schools. So Yogananda belongs to another school, and Satyananda. So I was kind of exposed to all these traditions at very young age, because Yogananda also has an ashram in which he founded in Ranchi. Which is also very close to my home. So that whole area, you see, on the bank of Ganges, the holy river Ganges, Varanasi and Bihar School of Yoga. Then also you go a little further, it's Bodh Gaya, where Buddha got enlightened. And then Yogananda has an ashram there, Yogda Ashram. So, and the whole tradition of Tantra and Yoga grew by the side of Ganges from Kashmir to Calcutta. on this part of India, these traditions flourished. And I happened to be there. I'm an old guy. So I just happened to be there and meet these great masters during my childhood.
Okay, so that was kind of the foundation it was put into you from a very young age.
Yes. And these schools, actually, in the very beginning, I want to make it clear, they had yoga and tantra together. So there was no division between yoga and tantra. They practiced yoga and tantra as a twin system, which we will talk about it later. And there was another enlightened master. His name was Krishnamurti. He had a boarding school in Varanasi, one of the most spiritual place in India. And that's where I studied with Krishnamurti. And then Krishnamurti has learned yoga from Mr. B.K. Sayangal. So when I finished my study there, he suggested, because he saw me practicing yoga, he suggested that I should be, when I finish my study, I should go to Mr. B.K. Sayangal and learn from him the alignment of body, breath and mind. Because if your body is not aligned, you can get injury in yoga. So when I grew up little and I finished my school, then I went to Mr. B.K. Sayangal. And I learned yoga from him. I stayed with him for a few years. Meanwhile, Osho is my spiritual master.
If I can pause you for a second, Iyengar is it's Ashtanga yoga.
Yes, so Ashtanga yoga, the modern Ashtanga yoga you see in the world, Ashtanga Vinyasa yoga, comes from Krishnamacharya. Krishnamacharya learned it from a Himalayan yogi. Earlier, before Krishnamacharya, these vidyas, these subjects were not available to common people. They were only practiced by the meditators, by the monks, by the renunciates in the mountains. But Krishnamacharya went to Himalaya to learn it from Ram Manohar Brahmachari. He learned it and he was asked by his guru to go back to the world, get married and make this subject, make this mystery available to the world. So he came back. He married to Mr. B.K. Iyengar's sister. And he started teaching to the common people this vidya, this knowledge. And he had two disciples, main disciples, Patavijvayas. He had many disciples, but two became world famous. Patavijvayas and Mr. B.K. Iyengar, who was brother of his wife. And Patavijvayas kept Ashtanga Vinyasa yoga exactly the way it was taught to him. But Mr. B.K. Iyengar brought a lot of props to help everybody practice this. So he made this Ashtanga Vinyasa yoga available to the whole, to anybody, sick people, old people, diseased people. Anybody can practice Ashtanga yoga with the help of props.
Yeah, because Ashtanga usually has that image of the harder, very disciplined type of yoga in the sense of at least the physical.
Yes. And originally it was taught to the warriors and the prince for developing the skills for battlefield. So they needed a very strong body which is flexible and strong. So flexibility, there was a balance of flexibility and stability for going to the war, for martial art, for learning the skill to fight with sword. So you can see all the martial art has grown from Ashtanga yoga. So Ashtanga yoga can give you perfect balance of flexibility and stability.
And very alert mind.
And very, very connected to breath and awareness. So that brings the whole subject of yoga not being an exercise, but being a path to awareness.
So let's go on this and skip a little bit on your background before we dive into that.
Yeah.
So because so then you studied with Iyengar.
Yeah, yeah.
Was that before you went to Norway and became a doctor?
Yeah, that was before that in 80s when also came back from America.
Okay, because I think it's very interesting to have you also both for this, for the yoga, but also when we'll talk about fasting in another episode, to have someone who has medical also knowledge and background in education.
Yes. So I also studied with Mr. Patavi's wife also, both the masters. But then I was very much more connected to Mr. Iyengar. Mm. He treated me like his own child.
Mm.
And my special master Osho was in Pune. So both masters were in Pune. So morning I will study yoga with Mr. Iyengar and then bicycle 7 kilometers to listen to Osho in the evening.
Mm.
So that's how my spiritual journey developed. And that time, before I started, restarted my study, all the Kundalini awakening and all those experiences I was going through, and that period of time, I got a lot of support from these masters. Yes. But when I got involved in the study and things, all those processes had a pause for a while.
You stopped yoga also, personal practice?
No, yoga I never stopped, neither practicing nor teaching.
Mm.
So no matter what study I did, what research I did, yoga was always in the background. Yoga and meditation, vipassana meditation, it always remained in my life like a background music.
Okay. Even when you were a doctor in Norway?
Yes, it never stopped.
And when did you start your school in Goa?
So I went to Europe, I studied, worked there. I already know about that, and that is not very relevant or important because that's something I did. When I was young also, my family, everybody talked about being financially secure and things, mm-hmm. which is all, according to me, when I look back at it, it was exaggerated version of security. Because we don't need so much security. The search for security is an illusion. You will be totally secure only when you are in your grave. As long as you are alive, you are going to be insecure, and to accept that insecurity and accept the challenge of life and be more adventurous is the way of yoga.
Mm.
So I think around 2009, I came back to India.
Mm-hmm.
And then I came back to my master again, my guru, with Mr. B.K. Iyengar, and I started helping him in the medical classes and I started again practicing intensely. That's when I met our lead trainer, Leela also. She was learning from Mr. B.K. Iyengar.
Who's in the audience today?
Leela is from Japan. She's one of the best Ashtanga teachers in the world. She is still working with us.
Mm. Yeah, very impressive handstands, especially.
Yeah, she has understood the whole process of awareness and how to bring awareness, how to combine awareness and breath with each and every movement in yoga. She had a very good understanding of that. Thank you for the impact of power.
And so, a bit more about the school?
Yes. So, 2010, when I, 9, 10, we started working with Guruji. He left his body in 2014. 1 year before, he asked me that you should go away from me.
When you say Guruji?
Guruji means Mr. B.K. Iyengar.
Oh, yeah. And just on this, Guruji is more respected master kind of, and that's more general title for guru.
The guru, word guru means one who has come out of his darkness, his ignorance. And by being in his presence, by hanging out with that person, it triggers something in you.
Mm.
That it triggers a passion, it triggers a thirst in you that you want to come out of your dark.
Mm.
So
I can call you Guruji then.
You can. It's a love affair between two human beings. One has come out of his sleep, his darkness, and you are struggling to come out of it. It's not like holier than thou or higher than other person. We all are born enlightened. Somebody has just discovered it, and we have decided to sleep a little longer. It doesn't make any difference. So this also we need to understand in this context of traditional yoga. Traditional yoga was not teaching, but it was more getting the transmission from the master to disciple in a ashram system, where in a gurukul system, where guru and shishya, master and disciple, are living together in that environment where you can receive the transmission from the guru. So I learned yoga in that system, traditional way, and that's how I want to present it to the world. It's not an academic subject which you can learn by reading books or watching videos, but rather you should look for a master who has gone on that path many times back and forth. He knows the path very well. It's better to have a guide on this path. On your own, if you are doing it, suppose you are going to a mountain, unknown mountain, and if you are going on your own, most probably you will get lost or get injured. Same thing is about the inner journey. It's even more relevant because on inner journey there is no measurement. So there is a lot of chances are there that you can get astray. You can get lost in the images of your mind. And then if there is somebody who can, and you will also face death. You will also face the fear of ending. And then it's good to have someone who has gone on that path and can give you the confidence. And don't be afraid. Go on moving. You are never going to die. It's just on this side there is an ending, but the other side there is eternal life waiting for you.
Yeah, that's why I like the word passing away more, like transition.
Transition, yeah. That's what Jesus also calls it, dark night of the soul. So every practitioner goes through that period, transition period, a lag, when the old is gone and the new has not come.
Okay, so you were talking more about an ego death, not what we call an actual death.
No, I'm talking about ending of your past, the known.
Yeah,
okay. And the new, the unknown, has not come yet.
Ah, okay, because I was talking also about physical death.
No. Physical death is not going to happen in yoga. What is going to happen in yoga is ultimate health and well-being. Death in yoga. There is a beautiful scripture in yoga. It's called Kathopanishad. That Upanishad, that is text on yoga, says that a little boy goes to learn yoga and about the soul and about the divine to the door of death. So it's a beautiful story. It goes, he is going to the death and asking him, teach me yoga. Teach me about my soul. Teach me about the divine, the ultimate. And death is teaching. It's a symbolic story that you got to accept ending for going into a new beginning in your life instead of being afraid of ending. It's a symbol. It's not actual death, physical.
Which ultimately in yoga is also some kind of an illusion, but that becomes more...
According to yoga, you have never died. Yeah. You have never died.
Born, never died.
Yeah, you cannot die. By the very nature of your being, you have never died. Death is an illusion. Your body ends the contact with your eternal being. And then other people think you are dead. Death is other people's opinion about you. You have never experienced. And body, if you say body dies, That's also not correct statement, because body was always dead. It was part of the earth.
Mm.
It was never alive. It was alive because it was in contact with something which is eternally alive. When that contact is broken, then earth goes to the earth.
Mm.
And your consciousness has never known death.
Would you say the same about the mind?
Mind has a beginning and an end. So, you see, anything which has a beginning, it has an end. Right?
Yeah.
That, does it make sense?
Yeah.
So, the part of yoga is to go to the very origin of your mind also. Not what to think, but what is the origin and structure of thought itself.
And so, people who have understood already that yoga is much deeper than doing a few poses and to work out the body, and which I think what we call yoga in the Western world is only what you'd call asana in the system of yoga, right? Which is more the, those posture. I got into yoga about 5 years ago and 6 years ago maybe, and to me it was like a different kind of workout that helps also to be flexible. And then I understood that was just a little part of it. So do you want to talk a little bit about how, you know, it's amazing that in the Western world we have yoga studios coming up, like popping up everywhere, and many people doing yoga and Instagram influencers, like yoga babes. It's great, but that also we've lost something in the translation.
Yeah, so I would say that it's not wrong actually, because yoga does address his body at a very deeper level. However, I love this instance. But suppose somebody gives you a plane which can make you fly, and you don't know the mechanism of that plane, and you see the wheels are there. So you put some bulls in front of the plane and make them drag you. So you use it as a bullock cart. Somebody comes from the mechanic. Some mechanic comes and says, oh, you don't need to pull it by bull. It has a motor. Actually, these wheels can move by the motor. So then you start using it as a car. So as a taxi. So it can take you somewhere. Actually, it has happened. Actually, it has happened in the Second World War. A plane landed somewhere, I think, in Vietnam or some shit, I don't know, or Thailand. And then the villagers didn't know how it works. So they were using it like a bullock car. So a mechanic came and said that you can use it as a motor car. And then they used it for a long time as a bus. But another like soldier came, some who knew how to fly, a pilot came, and he says, actually, it can fly. So then he started and he made it fly. So it's same thing about yoga. Yoga is a path to enlightenment. It can take you beyond body, beyond mind, beyond death. It can make you aware of your eternal self. And if you are using it for physical health and well-being, nothing wrong in it, but you're not using what it is meant for. It is meant for flying. You are using it as a taxi or a bullock car. And that's all I can say. I think it's very clear.
Yeah, it's a very good analogy.
But yes, you can begin with your body. Any kind of practice must begin with the body, because body is the most visible part. You can touch it. You can feel it. If it hurts your body, there is very little chance that you can be meditative. Suppose you are sitting in meditation and a little ant is biting you. You will forget about meditation. That ant will become your reality. So of course you need to align your body. You need to know about your body, how it functions, the physiology, the anatomy, the alignment, the diet, what to eat, what not to eat. You see, so many people are using yoga just for okay, last night I had a lot of food, tomorrow morning I can go to a yoga class and burn it off. Yoga will never help you to burn the extra amount of calorie you have consumed or the junk food you have consumed. Yoga can never help you. If you want to even succeed in having a flexible, strong body, you got to consider other part, good sleep, right diet, right kind of job. You cannot be working day and night and being ambitious and running after money and then practicing yoga. You see, because that will disturb your whole hormonal system. And when your hormones are disturbed by your diet, by your sleep, by your lifestyle, and you are just trying to pull the muscle or stretch the muscle or train the muscle, we say, even from medical point of view, if you look at it, you should never train sore muscle. Right? If you do it, you will just get injured. Same thing. By your lifestyle, you have inflamed muscular system, inflamed muscles. There is a lot of inflammation, and then you cannot, it's not good to practice yoga.
Actually, even in the gym culture, if you're a good bodybuilder, you know that muscles actually grow when you rest them.
Yeah. But how many people listen to that? They think that if I do 5 times, 10 times a week gym, I'll become very strong.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, it's the opposite will happen. You will just become inflamed. Maybe you look very swollen and big, but you're not strong. So gym culture, what does it mean for us? Do and die. And what yoga says to us? Do, pause, try to understand, bring intelligence, awaken your intelligence. There's a saying in yoga that if somebody is going to destroy themselves, the first thing happens to them is their intelligence is gone. They start doing things stupidly. That's the sure way to get injured. And yoga, if you ask me to define yoga, it will be awakening of intelligence. Awakening of intelligence. And when that intelligence starts operating in your daily living, in your physical movement, in your meditation, the very act of that intelligence brings health and well-being.
Mm. And so to go a little bit more into details, and in yoga you have, the asanas, the physical part of it, then you have breath, pranayama, you have like the meditation. Do you want to share a bit more about this?
Yes. So if I ask you, I said yoga is a method, technology to know yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So if I ask you, who are you? Not your name, not your family, not your nationality, not the education you have, apart from all that superficial thing, who you are, who am I? So first thing I can say, I'm this body. So obviously any kind of sadhana will start with this body. And what is the way to know the body? Or anything, you want to learn about anything, what is the way? Way is to become aware of that, to pay attention to it, to observe it. So you start observing your body. And if you go to yoga is such an ancient subject. Even 90,000, 95,000 year old statues they have found where they are doing yoga. It's a very old, millions of year old subject. But the most modern expression of yoga comes from two people. The first one is Patanjali, and the second one is Buddha. Very few people know that Buddha was one of the greatest yogi of modern time.
And you often have Buddha represented as a fat, laughing Buddha.
Yes, I will come back to that. But the first thing is, so Buddha divided yoga into four parts. First one he calls Kayanupasana, means observing your body. The second part he calls Chittanupasana, means observing your mind, your thought. Third one he calls Vedanupasana, observing your feeling. And fourth one he calls Dhammanupassana, means observing, paying attention to the state of your mind. So if you take now, and Buddha goes into very much detail.
Mm-hmm.
So first part he says your body can be in four states. Either you are lying down. Lie down you can do in two ways. Lie on your belly, lie on your back. So in yoga we call it supine pose and prone pose. Second one is you can sit down. So we have sitting poses. You can stand. We have standing poses. You can stand on your feet and you can stand on your hand and head. So you have standing poses on the feet. And then you have standing poses on the head and hand and elbow. So those are inverted poses, right? And then you have fourth one is movement. So Buddha says either you can lie down or you can sit down or you can stand or you can move. So when you move, that is called vinyasa. So you have lying down poses, you have sitting poses, you have standing poses, you have inverted poses, and you have poses with movement and breath.
Mm.
So in the same section of kaya upasana, kaya means body, upasana means observation. In the same section of kaya upasana, Buddha also added breath. Breath is just the bridge between your body and mind. Have you noticed when you are angry, you breathe in one way? When you are peaceful, you breathe another way. When you are sexually excited, you breathe in different way. Whatever is happening to your mind has an impact on your body and breath. And whatever is happening in your body affects your breath and mind. So breath, your prana energy, is a bridge between your body and mind. So when you are working on your body and mind, it's very wise to observe the breath and how subtle changes happens in your breath with the changes in your body and in your mind. And this is what he called anapanasati yoga. Means the awareness of your in-breath and out-breath. In modern time, they call it vipassana, but vipassana is a big word. Vipassana just means to see things. To perceive things.
My understanding when I did the 10-day Vipassana was the first few days we did that anapana, which is
observing the breath here, make a triangle at the
middle of the nostril and above the upper lip. But then my understanding of Vipassana is when we go more feeling the body from it's like almost a body scan that goes down and then back up.
That is the next step.
Yeah.
The first Vedana. The first one is to observe your anapana sati. Ana means incoming, ana means outgoing. Inhale, exhale, sati means remembering. Remembering your inhale and exhale. Sometimes people think, what is the point in it? Why should I sit and watch my silly breath? There is a point. Because your breath is happening right now, right here, in this very moment. And if you are searching for truth, you cannot search for it in future and past. It has to happen right now, right here. And breath is something happening now. So that's the point, that you are training your muscles to be in the present moment. So now you see the gym culture, the difference between gym yoga and the yoga we are teaching from the tradition. Gym culture, you are just doing thing, exercise. Then they should ask this question. If that is yoga, then why not circus people are yogi? Because they can do better circus than you. Why they are doing circus and you call yourself a yogi? But because you are doing the same thing. With the physical movement, if breath, mindfulness, and the spiritual growth is not aligned, then it's good. Maybe good for gymnastic, not for a spiritual, not as a spiritual too.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people do it for gymnastic, to be honest.
Good for them. You can use it as a bullock cart.
And you were talking a little bit about Vipassana also, like if that's something that's also like you've done the Goenka style retreats.
I have done Goenka style. I have done in monasteries. Months and months I have spent in monasteries with the Buddhist monks, and also I was very closely connected to His Holiness Dalai Lama. I was visiting him, I have traveled with him, and it was a pleasure to receive the transmission from him.
Mm.
And maybe you can put in your podcast some photos also of him, me and Dalai Lama together.
Yeah, yeah.
So people can see, and he's always like, we always very, very loving towards him.
Mm.
So thanks to his compassion and his greatness, I'm very thankful to him.
Mm.
Yes. So coming back to Vipassana, I think the most powerful meditation, the essential meditation, is Vipassana. The most people have become enlightened through this method. There are 112 methods of meditation in Vigyan Bhairava Tantra. The body of those meditations are different, but the, like this mala, you see, there are different beats, 112 beats, and this mala, but the thread is one.
Mm.
So same way in Vigyan Bhairava Tantra, 112 methods are there, but the thread is essential thread, which is running through all those methods,
mm.
is Vipassana.
That's and that was the method of the Buddha.
It was not of the Buddha. Buddha also became enlightened by this method.
Yeah.
So the method existed before Buddha.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, the one he practiced.
He practiced. So because these things are talked in Vigyan Bhairava Tantra in the conversation between Shiva and Shakti in Tantra books. And Buddha came upon this either through a master or through his own intuition and got enlightened by that method.
Okay. So. It's Shakti and Parvati are the... I don't know, sometimes I had people say it was with Parvati.
Yeah, Parvati is another name of Shakti. But basically, it symbolizes the masculine energy in us and the feminine energy.
Yes.
So the interplay between masculine and feminine, and when it is completely in harmony in you, you become enlightened.
Mm.
As long as there is any kind of conflict between your inner masculine and feminine,
mm.
It keeps you in ignorance.
And that's,
why this Shiva and Shakti, when they harmonize together, then the Kundalini reaches to your Sahasrara Chakra, and that state is called Ardhanarishwar. In Sanskrit, means you are half woman, feminine, and half masculine, and they are functioning in you in perfect harmony.
Yeah, exactly. I was going to say that's a perfect segue into Tantra. Just wrapping up on the Vipassana, I want to share if people want to know more, there's Vipassana centers all around the world. It's donation-based. You spend 10 days there, so there's a commitment, but it's a very beautiful practice. And we talked about it before, because after my fast, I've started back my 2 hours of Vipassana every day, so the 1 hour sitting in the morning and in the afternoon, and I feel so good doing it, so I'm very happy to be back to it and encouraging people to discover the beautiful practice centers are all around the world.
So this is what I would like to point out in your context, that you did 14 days fasting,
mm.
and then you did Vipassana. Have you done Vipassana before also?
Well, I did a 10-day.
10 days.
I did my 10 days like 4 years ago.
Yeah.
And then, but then I didn't do the 2 hours a day.
Mm.
I was still meditating, but doing a lot of different practices. And coming back from my fast, well, to start with, I had a lot of time,
mm.
because I was still didn't have much to do during my refeeding and I was strong enough. It felt really good to go back to it.
Mm. Yeah. So my point is, when you have done a 14 days fast, then Vipassana is a pleasant experience. Mm. But suppose somebody has been on a junk food diet for many years, I would not suggest them to go to Vipassana directly.
Mm.
Suppose somebody has been on a junk news diet for many years, suddenly I will not put them on Vipassana.
Mm.
I think first do catharsis, which you did. Fasting is a deep catharsis. It can bring up so many things. Or do some breath work or dynamic meditation of Osho or intense Ashtanga Vinyasa yoga, which is also cathartic. Go through some kind of detox process before you enter into Vipassana. Vipassana is one of the most easiest and simplest meditation if you are in a healthy state. But if you are full of junk in your mind and your body, it's not a good idea to directly sit for 10 hours and go into that kind of intense process. It can shake your nervous system. So my humble request to everybody who wants to explore Vipassana is to go into some kind of detox process before you enter into it. And we can help you with that.
That's a very fair point. And I think the listener and audience of the Light Leaders podcast are probably already have started some detox, but I think that's definitely a really good one. I want to add a little parenthesis as you were talking about this. After the fasting, I went mono fruiting. I tried like many fruits one at a time and see how does it feel in my body. And somehow grapes don't work well. And so when I had grapes and then I sat in Vipassana, it was so hard. My body and mind, like I was like, I didn't want to do it. So,
so next episode, we'll go deeper into it. That what kind of food is helpful in your practice, in your sadhana. Maybe traditionally what people believe that this is good for my practice and this is sattvic food is not that sattvic after all.
Okay, so that's, stay tuned for the next episode on fasting. You've done 21 days, I've done 14 days, that was in the past months, and that's going to be a separate episode. But now circling back to, you started talking about Tantra, right? And again, what I love about you, Rishi, is that you come presenting yoga from the tradition where it's not separate from meditation, it's not separate from the breath and the pranayama, it's not separate from Tantra. And actually, about a month ago, I was at a retreat with you and our beloved man, Ananda Sarita, who's been on the show twice. And it was an amazing retreat combining yoga and Tantra. And do you want to share a bit more about like how the two intertwine and understand?
Yes. So you see, yoga was designed for the renunciates, people who have left the world and who have gone in solitude, in the mountain, in the cave, in the monasteries, and in a kind of they are done, finished with the marketplace. And they just want to go into discovering their enlightenment solo. So that's why you see Buddha left his kingdom. He went alone on the path of truth. So it was designed for that kind of lifestyle. And then for that kind of search, you need a very strong, flexible body when you are on your own, right? When you are with people, maybe they can take care of you. But suppose you are 100-year-old and you are in the mountain, living in the cave, you got to have very, very strong, flexible body. So the yoga, the whole design of Ashtanga Vinyasa yoga or Hatha yoga is to keep your body alive, strong for long duration of time, right? You cannot afford to be weak in the mountains, right? You cannot even find food. You will become food for somebody if you are weak. So, and at the same time, you need to have very, very strong breath if you are on your own. And very clear mind, very sharp, attentive, a very swift mind you need to have. So yoga gives you very strong, flexible body, strong prana energy, breath, and sharp mind, intelligence, which you need to be on your own and then reach to the state of samadhi. But what about us? We are living in the society. You have a girlfriend, a nagging wife, or children. You have to go to the shop, buy things,
pay taxes, renew your passport. Ah.
So obviously, there is a different system with yoga. A twin system was parallelly together going on at the same time, where you have to deal with your feelings, because if you are in the society, people are going to step on your toes and provoke you. You're not living in the monastery. And you have to hunt your food, and you have to cook your food, and you have to take care of the relationship and your feelings and emotions, and you are connecting to another human being. So maybe sexuality also comes into play. And all these things will become a barrier if you are not educated to deal with that. Your emotions will, maybe you become a very high yogi and somebody calls you, oh, you're so stupid, and all your yoga is fucked up because you are now boiling with emotions. I think I'm so intelligent and somebody called me stupid. So your yoga, all your silence is finished. Then comes Tantra, that okay, you don't need to play solo and you don't need to be disturbed by things which you think are disturbing, but they can be your stepping stones and they can be supportive to your sadhana. So you have to deal with feelings, emotions, sexuality in such a way that they open the door for you. So there is no falling down, but wherever you are, from there a door opens for you. You don't have to become a holy man to reach to enlightenment.
Mm.
But wherever you find yourself in the process of evolution, right there a door is opening to the samadhi. That's the message of Tantra. Tantra is an education system where each emotion, each relationship, each activity, which is condemned by the religion, is not condemned in Tantra. Mm. So Tantra is a total acceptance of life.
Mm.
Everything is included. Because I learned Tantra in traditional system. If we have time, we can go deeper into that. Because the Neo-Tantra, which comes mostly from Osho, and the traditional Tantra, they are very similar but also very different. So that we'll see. Whenever you have time, we can go deeper into that.
Okay.
I don't know the structure now, how much.
Yeah, I mean, now we want to keep this one like not too long. So thank you for honoring that. But I'm sure we can have other ones. I just had a curiosity on when you talked about reaching enlightenment. I think would be very appropriate for here is how would you describe enlightenment?
Yes, for me, there are two words in yoga literature. One is called vyadhi, and the other one is called samadhi. Vyadhi means obstruction. Anything, if it is creating a problem for you, then it is obstructing your energy. And yoga has all the very, very precise, foolproof technique to remove all those obstructions, to remove all those vyadhis. And samadhi is a state of no disease. So vyadhi means disease. Disease means dis-ease. You're not at ease. You have some issue somewhere. So that vyadhi, when it is removed by practicing yoga, you reach to a state when you have no disease.
And from body and mind.
Everything.
Of the mind.
Body, breath, mind. All diseases are removed and you reach to a stage called samadhi. Samadhi means samadhan. Samadhan means all your problems solved. You have no more issue, physical, psychological, all issues solved. You are in a state of no disease. That is samadhi, but it's not enlightenment. That's why there are eight kinds of samadhi described in Buddhism and in yoga literature. So obviously it's not the final stage. So suppose, I give you one example. You have a dark house full of bugs and you want to make it good. So you open the window, open the door. A few things develop in the darkness, like cockroaches, spiders. When you open the door, window, they started disappearing. Mm. And few things develop in the light, such as flowers, plants, beautiful things will develop in there. So they started developing. So you remove the curtain, you open the window, fresh air is coming, but the sunlight has not come yet because it's not in your hand. But you have opened everything. And when the sun rises, the sunlight will come automatically. So that sunlight coming to your life is enlightened, grace. But that part, your homework you have done first. So yoga is the homework of detoxing yourself, opening all the windows, all the doors. That is the work of yoga. That is your homework. And then what happens after that is not in your hand, it's the grace. That is enlightenment.
Mm.
When you have done your work, you can just relax and sit, and there is a beautiful koan, or you in Zen, it's called haiku in Zen, 4 lines of poem. Sitting silently, doing nothing, spring comes and grass grows by itself. So you have done your homework, you have opened the door, you have cleaned the house, and then you just wait.
Mm.
The grace comes. It comes always. It comes. There is not a single moment of delay. Immediately, your whole interiority is filled with light and blessing. And your very living on the planet is a blessing to the planet. Mm.
Can feel it. Grace has come.
Yeah. It always comes. Immediately, whatever you deserve, it is given to you immediately.
And to precise, when you say this is in the this not being at ease, it can actually be someone who has what society would consider a disease. So, for example, I'm thinking of Ram Dass, was in a wheelchair and was in pure bliss, being, I love my pain, feeling the pain. So to him, it's not a dis-ease.
Yeah, because you see, first, he's at the last stage. Suppose you have reached to the ultimate bliss, and then your body has some karma, it has to exhaust, and it develops some disease. Then you're so far away from the body that it will not affect your bliss. But at this stage, at the beginning stage, if you have disease in your body, that's going to torture you. And that will not allow you to go closer to your soul, because any pain, suppose your toe is hurting, you have a neck pain, headache, will keep you close to your body. And yoga is a method to go close to your being, close to your soul. So for that, yoga proposes painless body, ageless body, timeless mind. Timeless mind means your mind, you sit alone, and not a single movement of thought. Sometimes when I'm walking on the beach, hours pass by. I'm walking for hours, and I notice that not a single thought has crossed my mind. That kind of silence is outcome of constant, conscious, continuous practice.
Namaste, brother Rishi Vasu. So, how long have you had your school in Goa? Like 30?
Yeah, 14.
Wow, amazing. And so now you're doing more and more things in Bali. So, look, I went to one of your retreats already with Mahananda Sarita, and you have a yoga teacher training that I'll be attending. In Ubud also, and I'd love to see aligned people also join us. Like, I've been thinking of doing yoga teacher training for a while, but I wanted for something very aligned and kind of exceptional to come up, and that was you. I'm excited. That will be October 18th to November 7th in Ubud at Swasti Eco Cottage, and then November 10th to December the 5th. I'll put in the YouTube description, I'll put the links and the Instagram so people can have a look more if they want to join us. Because that's you. Do you want to share something about you? You're excited about
You're most welcome. I'm looking forward to giving you the best training, and I can see the seed you have of becoming one of the great teachers and the person who can transmit this knowledge forward to the younger generation, coming generation. I can see that possibility. And if I can be of any help to nourish that seed and make it sprout and become a big tree, I'll be very, very thankful to have that opportunity.
Thank you so much. I've already felt very watered the seed and helped blossom by you. So thank you. And also before, you'll be like already teaching in Ubud and Uluwatu, I think like 360 move. So we also...
I'm starting
that. You do satsangs. So, yeah.
I'm starting a study circle where people can come and learn about the scriptures. And because I really want people to be connected to the tradition, to the origin, where it all started and where it comes from. And then I want them to have an intellectual understanding also. I want them to have an education. I'm creating an educational system for yoga, tantra, and all these subjects of inner journey. It's very helpful. Many people think I can just do practice and learn these subjects, which is very good. But with practice, you need to have study. And the way people study medicine, the way people are studying engineering, you should also give time, respect to this subject, that you give time to learn the subject, study it. Study it on your own. It's called Swadhyaya. So Patanjali says three words, and that is Tapas, Swadhyaya, Ishwar Pranidhanan, Kriya Yoga. If you want to learn yoga, then you need to have three factors. One is detoxing process, which we will talk later. Tapas means accepting the discomfort of transformation. Any habit you want to stop, whether it is sugar or alcohol or anything, habit you want to end, is going to be an uncomfortable situation. You have to come out of your comfort zone.
A bad relationship.
Bad relationship, toxic relationship, anything you want to change in your life. Any kind of change you want to bring, it's going to be uncomfortable. You have to come out of your comfort zone. And to accept, not only accept, but celebrate that discomfort. Like we did fasting, you and me. It was not a comfortable thing. You were starving yourself. But to accept that discomfort is necessary for changing your body and your toxic structures. And then second, he says, Tapas Swadhyaya, self-study. Study the subject, scriptures, and yourself. The whole history of mankind is within you. You just need to know how to read that book. So, to study, and then at the end, surrender, have devotion to the divine. Because without that, what is the whole point? You want to discover something untouched by any kind of pollution. Something very original. You want to discover that ultimate in your life. That's the whole game. That's the whole purpose of doing all this.
Thank you so much, Rizzi Basu. And I know we could speak about so much more. We have the fasting, but even like questions coming about, like, I know we want to do beautiful communities together. We'll do more. We'll do more. But that was an amazing introduction to what you're doing, to yoga for people. So thank you so much. So much for you.
Thank you to the whole tribe, the whole community. Very blessed to be here.
And thank you to the listener. So, of course, if you want to support, you can like, subscribe, share the video. And if you want to join us for an amazing yoga teacher training, make sure to look into the details, and we'd love to see you there.
Thank you.
Namaste.